The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today in the studio, we have Anne Marie Johnson. Anne Marie is the Vice President of Civilian Business Development for ASI Government. Prior to ASI Government, Anne Marie spent over 20 years at CSC, where she held a variety of technical management and marketing development positions. Anne Marie has a Master's in Science and Information Technology from George Mason University and a Bachelor's of Business Administration from James Madison University.
So, Anne Marie, women are still very much the minority in leadership positions in the government and the federal IT sector. And you've been in this industry now for over 20 years in some pretty male-dominated organizations, I'm sure. So first, what made you go into this industry? Was there somebody early in your life that encouraged you to?
So I started my career with the federal government, what is now known as the Government Accountability Office, and they were amongst the first agencies to go to this banding system. And I figured out that while I had come into the most amazing training program, that once I had advanced to a certain degree, that people were going to have to, you know, like die or retire for me to be able to be promoted. And this was in the late 1980s, and that was the time when this new market called federal IT was opening up. And I had always had an interest in technology, although I had not pursued a computer science degree in undergraduate school. And so I decided I would go pursue that field. And I did it as much for career advancement potential as anything. And what I discovered is that I could actually make my next promotions. And I found that to be very empowering because in the government, because of the way that government is structured, there's limitations in terms of how far you can advance. Whereas in the private sector, if you're able to grow the business, you can grow into your next position. And in fact, that's what I did. And at the time, back in the late 80s, early 90s, everything I was reading was saying, this is a great place for women to go. You know, it's opening up, it's wide open, there's going to be so much potential. And it was what we would call white space or a blue ocean now. And it was looking very, very bright. And of course, as was noted earlier, I decided I really ought to go to graduate school and I should get some depth in what I'm doing here. And so I did that. And I think an interesting thing has happened, as you noted, Gigi, that there aren't as many women as I would have thought 20 years ago that we would be seeing now. And I don't really know exactly how that has happened or why that has happened. One of my theories is that here in the D.C. area, that the federal technology business is really tightly intertwined with the defense business, and that many of the IT companies are also defense companies, and that the defense companies, I think, have historically been very male-dominated. Now, in my 20-year career at CSC, I mean, there's certainly obviously a lot of men, but there was an amazing group of women at CSC, and I had the great fortune of having these women to mentor me, to give me opportunities. I'm going to give a few of them a shout out. Carol Bothwell, Eileen Dauphin, both were absolutely remarkable. And there were many other wonderful women. Another that came into my career as a mentor was Dr. Sharon Hayes. Just fabulous women who helped me to see that I could do it. And there was this other cadre of wonderful women at CSC where we really did help each other. And there were also wonderful, wonderful men at CSC. And one of the things that I figured out is that if I was working with a man who had a wife who was also a professional or had daughters who were on a professional track, that they totally got it. And they were the most incredibly inspirational and helpful people. And then this other really interesting thing happened when I was in my 40s. I started realizing, well, how do I want to be when I'm in my 50s? What I think of as my fabulous 50s. And how do I want to be in my sensational 60s, as I now think of it? And so the wives of two of my colleagues actually became role models for me for how I was going to be hip and cool in my 50s, also very mature, not like a 20-year-old, because that's not, I don't think that's appropriate, but how to be hip and cool as an appropriate 50-year-old. And so now here I am in my fabulous 50s, and I'm hoping that I'm setting a role model for those coming behind me, just as I'm looking ahead to those who are a decade or two or three ahead of me to help me see the path for where it is I want to go.
Well, you have just given us a whole plethora of great follow-up questions to ask and things to dive in deep about. Let's just start, though, at the very beginning to your family when you were growing up. So who or what was your biggest influence, maybe to follow a technical path or to go into government or private industry? Was there somebody who you looked at? Did you come from a family of civil servants? Who did you look to that served as your inspiration?
So I did come from a family of civil servants. My dad was a civil engineer, and as a kid, I actually really liked playing with his engineering drawing kit. And my mom was a huge inspiration. My mom said, even when I had my little part-time job at Wendy's Hamburgers, and she said, you do a fair day's work for a fair day's pay. And while there's some times that I might have felt like grumbling, but you know, there was something in the back of my mind, and I think it was my mom's voice that said, no, you need to go earn that money and you need to work hard for that money. And my mom's also this incredibly positive person. She's had a plethora of health issues that would have probably done the average person on, but she's just like, you just keep on trucking, you just keep on trucking, you keep on doing what you've got to do. And so I think I got from her a tremendous work ethic, as well as this emphasis on being positive and just keep pushing on through, keep pushing on through, and, you know, find that hope, find that good.
Today we're talking with Anne Marie Johnson, Vice President, Civilian Business Development at ASI Government. Anne Marie, you run a very large group at ASI. Can you tell us a little bit about what about them and what you do?
So ASI Government is a absolutely fascinating place. ASI actually created the market of doing acquisition and contract procurement support for the federal government. It was started 20 years ago by two civil servants who wanted to bring more innovation into federal government procurement. And so those leaders created this company that I'm proud to be part of now that actually has pushed the edges on procurement within the federal government. They were the ones who worked with the government to write performance-based service acquisition. They also created the concept of statement of objectives. And they have this relentless drive toward it's the outcomes. And today, ASI is pushing the edges in an area called category management. People in the private sector would say, well, we've been doing that for 20 years. And that's absolutely true. The government is now looking at how they can bring the principles of category management into federal procurement so that federal buys can be more effective. And so there can be a focus on where purchases need more attention. And as I'm talking, I want to emphasize that ASI is so much about the outcomes. And so in my role at ASI, one of the transformations that I'm aspiring to do with the leadership team is to help the market to understand that ASI begins with the business advisory services. What's the problem to be solved? And defining that problem is really quite a challenge, and it takes a conversation with other people. So in the government procurement world, it's a team sport. It's the program manager. It's the finance people. It's the domain experts, like in the IT field, the systems engineers. It is the contracting officer and contracting specialist. It's also industry. And one of the mind shifts that I want to be a part of making is that we are truly all on the same team here. This work is to serve we the people. The work that the federal government does is to protect and serve our nation. And I think that that mission is so exciting, and it is absolutely thrilling beyond words to be a part of a community of people who very much want to make this change.
Looking at your LinkedIn page, I found that it was written quite unusual. It says, having a blast pushing the edges for a highly regarded brand. So tell me, let's bring it back to you versus ASI. How are you pushing the edges? Have you gotten pushback while you pushed the edges?
You know, as I was thinking about this interview and in doing some self-reflection and ever looking to how do I tell my story? What is my story? How do I tell my story better? Somewhere in, you know, that combination. And I realized I have always pushed the edges. In undergraduate school, I was multidisciplinary. I did this my degree in business because we were in a recession in the 80s, and I really wanted to get a job. Like many teenagers, I really wanted to go move out on my own. And I think that's a good thing that teenagers want to do that. And so I knew I needed to get a job. And so I figured I should get this business degree, and that would be more practical. But I loved studying economics. And I had this wonderful advisor who convinced me to change my major from international business into economics. And he said, what we'll do is we will teach you how to think and how to write. And then go work for a few years. Figure out what you think you want to do. And then go to graduate school, because you'll have a sense as to what the field is like. And you will bring practical world experience into graduate school, into that theoretical work that you're doing. And so I decided I would change my major to economics, and then absolutely became enthralled with political theory and philosophy. And so what I really did was I had this degree in business with a major in economics, with a lot of philosophy dumped in there for good measure. And then I minored in French because I'm of French-Canadian heritage. And I had this wild idea that I wanted to learn how to speak French, even though language is not my strength. And my children will tell you, I have a 17-year-old and a 12-year-old, my children will tell you that I always say words wrong. So it makes it a little tougher to learn a language. And then in graduate school, I did my Master's of Science in Information Technology. You know, it's a nice, good propeller head degree in my little propeller head business world. But I was doing a lot of what we called requirements facilitation, joint application development work at the time. And because of my work in economics, I looked at this and I was like, well, this is an inherently a conflict-ridden process, because there are, I'm such an economics geek, because there's a limited amount of time and resources to do the development of the information system, and you've got to sequence it. But how do I, in my information technology world as a systems analyst, have any idea how to sequence that, and how do I resolve those conflicts? So I talked with my advisors in graduate school, and I asked them if I could go trotting over to the social sciences side of the campus, to the Institute for Conflict Analysis and Resolution, and take my electives in conflict resolution. And they said yes. They got my point that it's a conflict-ridden process. And I was exploring at the time this idea that there's this really terrible assumption in information technology. And I think also that it's in procurement, it's really in any kind of problem solving. And that is that people know exactly what the problem is to solve. They know exactly what the requirements are. Well, they don't. And this is an area I still find of interest now, exploring this from an acquisition perspective. And so I go over to the social sciences side of the campus, and they're really wondering what the propeller head's doing over here. And we're going through the theory, as you do in graduate school, around conflict resolution, which is primarily in international relations and labor relations. And we're having these discussions. And, you know, I'm doing this part-time, so I have my day job where I'm facilitating these meetings, trying to figure out how the heck do you decide how to sequence these systems and resolve this conflict. And so I'm the one bringing the real-world examples into the conflict resolution classes, because while I'm there to get the theory, and I appreciate very much grounding in theory, I'm also looking for very pragmatic information on how do I move forward. And I think one of the most powerful things I learned in graduate school really were from those two classes over in ICAR, and that is that people need to find common ground if they're going to work together. And one of my key tenets in any kind of problem solving is find that common ground. And with that common ground, find a common destination. And when you need to resolve conflict, you move from a compromise, which is I have to give up something, you have to give up something, and you reframe the work, and you reframe it toward we need to get to this place that we have both agreed that we want to go. And sometimes you have to then say, you know, what is it that grounds us? What is it that we have in common? What are our values? What is it we're trying to do? And then I think as a leader, we need to set that destination and then keep focusing on that goal and realizing that there are zigs and zags that you're going to take in getting to that goal, but that finding that common ground and working toward that is a key tenet in conflict resolution. And I think a key tenet in creating a better life and pushing those edges that we want to push.
Today, we're talking with Anne-Marie Johnson, VP of Civilian Business Development at ASI Government. Coming up, we'll hear about Anne-Marie's early career years. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, we're talking with Anne-Marie Johnson, Vice President of Business Development at ASI Government.
So, Anne-Marie, as we mentioned, prior to joining ASI Government, you were with CSC for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And in your bio, I read that you wrote that your, quote, great career irony was shifting from delivery to business development, a choice that was made with a ticket in hand back into operations if needed. So that was just such a juicy quote to read in a bio. I've got to ask you about that. What did you mean by that?
Thank you. I still do refer to that as my great career irony. So I started my career doing the information technology delivery type work. And I'm a very pragmatic, outcome-oriented person. And I appreciate very much having some depth, you know, sinking your teeth into what you're doing. And I was on the receiving end of what we refer to as these wet dripping bags coming over the transom of this work that we in delivery just, you know, you had to figure out how you were going to deliver it. And while there were some absolute exceptions, there were many people in business development that truly had no technical background. They didn't understand what requirements were about. They didn't understand what software development was about. And they sold beyond what they really could. And I had, I think, a very inappropriate, incorrect perception of many people in business development. And, you know, sadly to say, and speaking candidly, some women in business development, and I'm just not that way. Well, that's okay. And so my great career irony is that I had, let me give a little more context. I had the great joy of being able to go to the National Defense University for a 14-week educational sabbatical. That was one of the many gifts I got from Aileen Dauphin, who made sure I found a way to get there. And I come back and my plan is, now that I've been to the National Defense University, I'm going to have better Defense Department connections. I'm going to be able to grow my IDIQ contract, which was brand stinking new at the time. And I'll be able to now have more credibility in with the defense crowd because, you know, I have now been to National Defense University. And so I come back and within a matter of weeks, I get this invitation to become one of the business development team and take on some civilian agencies. It's like, well, that wasn't the plan. You know, I make my plan and I execute my plan. And this is when I really needed to learn, you know, a plan is really a great thing to have, but then life happens. And sometimes these really great things happen and you need to take advantage of it. And I have to really thank the people who were involved in all of this because they saw something I didn't see in myself. And I was hemming and hawing about whether or not I really wanted to do it because, you know, really go on the airy-fairy side with the business development crowd. And I just don't, I'm not like some of them. And they said, okay, Anne-Marie, if for any reason this doesn't work out on the business development side, we'll take you back in operations. You're a great operations person. And so looking back, I still chuckle as I think, you know, gosh, how easy did they have to make it for me? And how long did it take me to finally say, okay, I'm going to go do this? So I did. And that's whenever I worked for Pat Ways, one of the most amazing business development executives ever, a phenomenal mentor. And he said, you know, I think you're going to do great and we'll help you out. And he and the other business development team, because it was very much of a team collaboration spirit at the time, helped me to learn how to be a really good business developer. And I came to understand this concept that I think is pretty well understood now, and that is consultative selling. And I realized that, oh, I get to help my clients solve problems, which is what I loved about doing delivery. And I get to now do it from the perspective of setting up the solution in advance. Instead of having a wet dripping bag, I get to, you know, like get a good quality bag and pack it up in a good way. And then I realized, oh, I don't have those pesky deliverables anymore. I just need to go out and create these solutions and talk with these clients and talk about the art of the possible and talk about how to then make this happen and then put together the plans in terms of bids that would then help our clients, our government, to protect and serve we the people better. And I actually found that to be absolutely a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. And I have thoroughly enjoyed the opportunity to help our clients solve some of the toughest problems. And they often are not just technology problems, they're people problems, they're process problems, it's an integration problem. And I came to realize I'm really a systems thinker. I see the whole, but I'm also very pragmatic in looking at how to find a path forward to make a meaningful difference where results matter, outcomes matter. And I enjoy that aspect of business development when you actually do get to celebrate those wins.
So I have to just ask you a quick follow-up question. Did you ever have anybody on the other side, on the deliverable side, who looked at you and said, Anne-Marie, what were you thinking? You've just handed me this wet bag of whatever to try to implement.
So whenever I made this transition, I made this vow to myself that I would be the kind of business developer that an ops person, a delivery person would just love to work with. And I achieved that with several of my colleagues. I had an operations counterpart who was absolutely phenomenal. He and I worked like hand in glove, and he was another actually wonderful mentor to me. And in fact, his wife was one of my mentors also. And we helped each other out in terms of what to do, because I could offer him some perspective on his delivery work. And he was few decades along in his career than I was, and he could offer me some perspective that would help me to do my work. And then I also had this phone call from another delivery person that was a level down, and they just spontaneously basically said, you know, Anne-Marie, you're the kind of business development person that delivery people like to work with. And I had to pause and say, you may not know it, but you've just really made my day. And I told him the story about the commitment that I made for myself. And, you know, I'm still that way. In my work at ASI, I didn't know that much about acquisition when I came into ASI 18 months ago. But I've had these amazing delivery people who have educated me on how acquisition should work, what it should be. And I say to them that delivery people are the most valuable asset in business development, because delivery is where client advocacy is created. And I just believe very firmly that client advocacy is the strongest asset that a company can have going forward to try to build the business. And without good delivery people, you can't have client advocacy.
Your graduate degree is in information technology. But the U.S. is facing a STEM crisis, particularly with women and minorities. Women still represent low double-digit numbers in the engineering computer fields. How do we reach out to girls and women and minorities to help encourage them to study STEM and to go into these careers? I mean, the numbers won't work unless we attract that other 50% of the population.
That's a great question. And I think the work that the two of you do here with this radio broadcast is one of the many steps forward in terms of how to get more women into STEM. I have a daughter who's nearly 12 years old, and she has had an interest in engineering, in math. You know, she took her plastic erector set and created this little car that she put on a string, and the string went from part of her bunk bed over to someplace else in her room. And for me to crawl down into the bunk bed and have cuddles with her at night, I had to make sure I didn't get clotheslined with that string. And a part of me wanted to tell her to take that down, but another part of me said, and you will not. And you will not tell her to take that down, because this is her engineering. This is her creation, and you need to affirm that. And I put an emphasis in on affirming that. and have had her to get engaged with math and science. She has a ridiculous number of Lego sets in her room, and we absolutely support that because I think that is a part of the engineering. She took a stick and a string and created her swing that's still outside on the dogwood tree in my front yard. And she goes out and swings on it. And she was very proud several years ago whenever she created that. Well, that's a form of engineering. And that's a form of, you know, playing around with mechanical things. And where she ends up going and what she ends up doing, that's absolutely her path. But I have had conversations with her about how as she gets into middle school, people may tell her that girls shouldn't do math. And I said, just know that's not true. And I've had the great joy of, I have a neighbor who's an engineer, other people who are in the STEM field. And there's some great teachers at my daughter's elementary school who are women in math. And they actually promote women in math. There was a probability fair that the fifth graders did. And I don't know how I managed to get a ticket into the probability fair because this was not open to the parents. And I had told a colleague of mine about the probability fair and how these girls were having the best time talking about their little booths that they were making at this carnival where they were really using the concepts of probability. And they were doing it in a very fun way that I thought engaged girls in such a cool way. I corresponded with the math teacher and I ended up scoring probably only two of the adult tickets that got in. And she gave us these little tickets so we could go around the carnivals and the booths and play the probability games and talk with these girls and boys about the math that they were doing. And my colleague thoroughly enjoyed it also. And she said, you know, this is women in STEM and this is where it begins. And for me to have the opportunity to come to your child's school and talk with these other girls and boys about the work that they were doing with probability is, I think, one of the most important things we do. And that mentorship is very important.
Today, we're talking with Anne Marie Johnson, Vice President, Civilian Business Development at ASI Government. Coming up, we'll ask Anne Marie about her Fed 100 award. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, we're talking with Anne Marie Johnson, Vice President of Civilian Business Development at ASI Government.
Congratulations. You just won a Fed 100 award for your leadership of the Acquisition Transformation Project of ACT-IACT. So tell us a little bit about that project, if you could, please. What were some of the recommended changes that you guys came up with?
So I appreciate very much the congratulations. Winning the award was a surprise to me. I didn't even know I was nominated. A colleague from another person in industry nominated me for the award, and there were some government people that were very strongly behind that award. And I think it's a wonderful example of the tremendous community that we have in the federal information technology professional services space. And I very much value being a member of that community. So when I joined ASI Government about 18 months ago, there was some work that ASI had been a part of in terms of creating a vision for acquisition of the future. And what that did is brought together senior acquisition officials and other leaders, Mary Davey being one of them, to think about how could the government buy better? How could we get better outcomes through procurement? And what they created was an acquisition transformation framework that's basically kind of a capability maturity model for those of us in the IT field, where you have dimensions of change or rows on a table, and then the columns are the levels of maturity. So you have a way of talking about where are you now and where do you want to be, which dimensions of change are going to bring the most impact or have the most relevance to your particular organization. So like any good framework, it provides a way to have a conversation and a way to chart a roadmap going forward. So that great work had been put together. It was moved over to ACT-IAC, which is a professional development organization where industry and government come together to create a better government for all of us. And I was asked to step into a leadership position and rejuvenate that and, you know, figure out what to do with it. So I like this. I like getting things started. So I had some great support from people who were previously involved. And they said, you know, we're going to help you. We're going to help you with this. You know, have a great team. Keep good company is definitely one of my mantras of life. And so we put a charter in place as to what we wanted to do, and we defined these objectives of creating community and transforming acquisition. And we got this amazing group of executive champions together, many of whom had been involved before. And it's a absolutely amazing group. Mary Davey, I noted, David Grant from FEMA, Elliot Branch is now part of the group. Harry Halleck was with us from Army prior to him retiring. Jeff Kosis, Greg Giddens, Soraya Correa, and Luke McCormick are also involved. And the idea here was to take that work and go forward. And so we laid out a list of activities, one of which was to pilot the guide. Well, it's one thing to come up with something. It's another thing to put it, to go road test it. So we had what we now call our Wave 1 pilots with FEMA and with Department of Treasury, where we tested the framework, and we found that the guide really does work quite well. And like anything good, we found ways to improve it. And so those improvements are now being published in to be part of the guide. And we now have, we're defining our Wave 2 pilots for this year moving forward. And then in the fall, I got this wonderful co-chair from Army, courtesy of Harry Halleck. My co-chair is Dina Jeffers. She is one of those passionate civil servants that I wish more people outside the Beltway could meet her and understand her passion. She was instrumental in creating a presentation for the DOD Section 809 panel, which is charged by Congress with rethinking acquisition and, you know, hopefully removing it from the Byzantine concept that it is today, so that we can unleash the power of the private sector to protect and serve we the people. And so we took that framework, we took some recommendations that basically said, you got to not think old school in this, and you got to look way out beyond acquisition, that this is a program management issue, it's a team sport issue, and allow people to go make new mistakes, allow people to think. And so it's very exciting to be part of pushing the edges on how procurement, which is actually half of how the federal government gets its mission support, is through the private sector. So how can we do that more effectively and pushing the edges there?
In addition to being very active with ACT, IACT, I noticed that you're a frequent blogger and networker. Now, we've told by many of our guests that are very effective at networking, they leverage social media quite a bit. So do you use this to help build your career?
Yeah, I do it for two reasons. I do it for self-expression. I do it because I have some ideas, and I test out the ideas, and then I realize, well, people find that kind of interesting, and maybe I should write that down. And so I write that down. And it took me a lot of years to figure out how to blog in a more conversational manner, because I think at my core, I'm really kind of geeky. And so I've been working on how to be more engaging and more conversational in the blogs. And the other thing that I'm doing with it is to test some areas of where, you know, those edges, pushing those edges in terms of where is the market going. I'm very intrigued with the idea of public-private partnerships. That's one of the ideas that the current administration is exploring. There was this great example in New York City called Link NYC, where the old telephone booths were replaced with Wi-Fi kiosks, and that was done all on advertising revenue. And so there was actually no expense to the citizens of New York City, and in fact, New York got paid for the asset that they had. And I think there's just intriguing business model changes that are going on there. We've talked about category management. I think category management is a business model change, and it's an opportunity to reduce costs, not on the just on the government side, but also on the industry side, to operate more efficiently. I think it could become a channel for unleashing the innovation of the private sector and getting that to power the way that we protect and serve we the people. I'm interested in data analytics, and I think that evidence-based decision-making is very important going forward. And so talking about how Sun Tzu would have truly enjoyed having this very cool, wicked weapon called data analytics.
So you do a lot of networking. Has that helped your career? I mean, you're active in IAC. I was looking at your LinkedIn profile. You're active in several organizations. Tell us how that has impacted your career, and would you recommend this next generation who's trying to have the type of career that you have, how would they leverage that networking?
I think networking is absolutely essential. I think that the best jobs are found through relationships. I think that the best teaming arrangements are put together through trusted relationships. And the only way you build trust is to have human conversations. But I think also at a more core level that to network is to be human. I think that as human beings, we are called to be in relationship with each other, that the joy in life comes from connecting with people and deepening those connections. And I have had the most amazing people come into my life through my professional world. Early in my career, my very first boss ended up over a period of decades becoming such a dear friend that I think of her as my sister. I have had other very dear friends come into my life that have enriched my life, former bosses, former clients, former colleagues, and that at the end of the day, this networking thing, you know, there's business. I'm a pragmatic gal. Yes, we have to make money. Yes, we have to do that. But I emphasize good business and finding good people and trusted people. And I enjoy people. To me, the opportunity to meet new people, to hear their stories, to understand from whence they have come, what they sense is going on in the world, helps to enrich my life. And so to me, this isn't something that I do to advance my career. I'm not going to discount that. I'm not going to say I don't know that that's valuable. I mean, all that's very true. But I'm at this from a much more core level. And as time has gone on, it's been a great source of joy to me to find out from people how deeply they have felt connected to me and I to them. And I think that's what makes life rich.
Today, we're talking with Anne-Marie Johnson, VP of Civilian Business Development at ASI Government. Coming up, we'll ask Anne-Marie about how she balances it all. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, we're talking with Anne-Marie Johnson, Vice President of Civilian Business Development at ASI Government.
We always find it interesting to ask our guests, and so we'll ask you this question. What do you like to do when you're not working? It's clear that you take your job so seriously, but do you have any hobbies or special interests?
I do have a lot of special interests. I have a family. I have a wonderful husband. My son, my daughter, our Labradoodle, a chinchilla, and two fish. The hamster died.
Sorry.
Yeah. So I enjoy very much a community of actually of wonderful women in my life. I started my day this morning with the Spinderellas, as we call ourselves. This is a group of women who've gotten together, many of us for about 15 years, and we do a spin class on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I enjoy spin cycling when I can get out. I enjoy yoga. I do a little weight training. I think physical fitness is important for a fit mind. I also enjoy reading very much. And anytime I get the opportunity to read, it's wonderful. I like to go out and putter in my garden and, you know, pull a few weeds and that kind of thing. I also like to cook, but I also like to eat. And I think that having dinner parties is one of the penultimate signs of a civilized life. And it means that we slow down, we break bread together, we have conversation. And I very much enjoy having people into my home. I enjoy going into other people's homes and being with them, being present with them, breaking bread together. I think that that's just a whole lot of fun.
Anne-Marie, your success is clearly not limited to your career. You have a family and you're very active in the community. How do you do that all? Tell us, how do you find that ability to be able to, I hate this term balance, but how do you make those choices to make it work?
My metaphor is that I have this like pot of water boiling on the stove, and I kind of like to keep my pot at a simmer with the lid just rattling just a little bit.
I love that vision. That's good. Excellent.
But at times I feel like the heat's a little hot and that, you know, it's all falling out all over the stove. I don't know if that's ever happened to you when you cook, but it's happened to me quite often. And that's how sometimes I feel like my life's getting. And between these amazing colleagues that I've had the joy of having, and also big shout out to the other moms out there. Moms are wonderful people. They are incredibly kind and forgiving and uplifting of each other. And they know that, as my one neighbor said, I'm not the only mom chasing her tail up the street. And to find that, you know, I really am in this together. And I think one of the edges that I've pushed is to let go of a tendency I have still probably for perfection. Well, it ain't going to work. And one of the things I think I learned with having a child, my son was born 17 years ago today, was, you know, I had my birth plan because that's what we did in that time. I think it still goes on. And I knew exactly how everything was going to go out. And then this child who a week before was heads down on the launch pad ready to come out. And I know that because I had been rear-ended a week before my son was due, and there were all the sonograms and whatnot. And so I know, I have medical proof, he was heads down. And this is an 8-pound, 8-ounce baby. He was big. And so then what happens? I'm in labor. Labor's taken forever. And the doctor says, well, we're going to break your water. Okay. And she has a strange look on her face. He had turned breech. So he was an unplanned C-section. And that was one of the beginnings of, well, it just doesn't go like you think it's going to go. But I had this healthy baby. I recovered. Everything was fine. And so I look back at that and see that as one of 10,000 examples of where it may not go as you planned, but you have really good people in your life around you. And as my mother always said, you just keep on pushing through and it works out.
Let's fast forward 10 years from now. She's trying to pursue a career, just starting out. What advice are you going to give her to help her achieve the incredible results you have, both professionally and personally?
I would tell her that everything works out. I would tell her that you just keep on doing your best. I would tell her, as I tell her now, more tell isn't quite the right word, to keep good company. And I find great joy that she has a wonderful set of friends who, even as a sixth grader, these girls are very kind and uplifting to each other. And that having good people in your life is, I think, one of the key essences of creating a successful life, because life can be very difficult and life will inevitably throw a lot of adversity at us. And we don't always know where it's going to come from. But what I can say is that it does happen. And to have other people in your life to uplift you and to encourage you is really important. And I think the other part is, just like my mom told me, I say to both of my children, work hard and you need to earn what you get, and nobody's going to give it to you. And you, I say to my children, have a very blessed life. And with that, go do more, go bless others with what you have, and go create. I think ultimately we are here to create and to give. And I think that's part of why I really enjoy pushing the edges, because it's a form of creation. And I would also say to my daughter, have fun. Enjoy it, because it's an amazing ride.
Today, we're talking with Anne-Marie Johnson, VP of Civilian Business Development at ASI Government. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.